Get back in there.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Forge to Comic News. I am one of the hosts, Chris, alongside
the other host, Mike. Me.
What's going on,
Mike? Man. Well, I'll tell you what's going on. We just got done with an hour-long interview.
Yeah.
And, we're going to mess with the timeline today and splice that into the today's show. If anybody's watching Flash right now, Barry just, like, he keeps fucking with the timeline, and they're like, but I thought you weren't supposed to do that, and, like, he went back in time, he grabbed Captain Cold to steal some shit from King Shark, and they're like, but you can't go back in time and grab Captain Cold, because... He's like, well, I'm going to put him back where I found him. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not how that works. But they did it anyway. Doesn't give a shit. Barry Allen. But yeah, that's kind of what we're doing today. We're just, you know, picking people up out of the timeline, using them to get things done that we need. And then we're just putting them back in the timeline somewhere, even though we know it's going to lead to their eventual death. That's kind of like what we're doing today.
Yeah, I've done too much work today to do anything less, so...
Exactly.
So let's jump right into it. It's going to be a super long show.
Yeah, super long show. So Black Lightning trailer sucked. Bad. CW, don't do it. Just don't. Okay, so we're gonna speed through this stuff. But Black Lightning. Okay, so CW has another show coming out. It's Black Lightning, which that's cool. I'm fine with that. They're going down the route of Black Lightning. Okay, so first they change the suit. The suit looks super bad now. The original suit that there was this awesome poster for, it looked pretty cool. It was like the leather Black Lightning suit. It didn't have all lights and shit all over it. Like, he doesn't need lights. The guy generates lightning. He doesn't need lights on his suit. He's bright enough. Doesn't need it.
The show's for millennials, so there's got to be lots of neon lights and fidget spinners. Lots of neon
fidget spinners. Oh man, it's like the underglow shit that they used to put on their cars.
They still do.
They still do. Anyways, so it's like the old retired Riggs, I'm getting too old for this shit kind of don't spit your drink out. Kind of superhero where he's old, he's fed up, he's going to put the uniform back on because whatever, his kid's life's in danger. And then we find out his kid has powers. It's almost like the trailer's too long, shows too much. But what it does show is a whole lot of nothing, so nothing's spoiled to begin with. It's trying to be too much like Luke Cage, and I think you agree with me.
Yeah, I said Luke Cage meets Iron Man. I agree with everything. It comes off cheesy, but at the same time, I'm going to give them a chance because it's CW, it's the Berlantes. They've done everything right, so they deserve a chance. So, we'll see.
Next, Sci-Fi killing it. Someone reads comic books over at Sci-Fi. Yeah, the Sci-Fi channel is a thing for anybody who hasn't watched it since what was that show?
The Sci-Fi channel?
Yeah, exactly. The Sci-Fi. They changed it to SYFY or whatever.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, that or Stargate. I think those are only like two popular shows.
Oh yeah, Stargate.
Stargate was a thing, yeah. Come on.
Dude, my father used to watch Stargate nonstop.
Yeah, it was like all the Star Trek fans were like, Stargate was a movie, though, with Kurt Russell, so...
Oh, the movie was great. Anyways, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
The movie. Oh,
Kurt Russell, isn't it?
Yeah.
It could be debated that almost every movie that Kurt Russell makes is a good movie, but we don't have time for that today. That's for another episode of the podcast.
Yeah, we had enough movie talk during the interview. You'll see people.
Okay, so Sci-Fi is making two new TV shows. The first one being one of my favorite books by Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely team up. That's my favorite team up ever to happen in comic books. If you've ever listened to the podcast, is a 4-issue miniseries called Happy that he released. Oh, geez, like 3 or 4 years ago around Christmas time. It's a really depressing tale of this cop who's. He's addicted to drugs. He's all washed up and he gets visited by a little girl's imaginary friend. We don't know if he's actually there or it's just this guy has been high in pills, but he leads him to find this girl who's been kidnapped by a sex ring or something. It's really messed up. It also is Grant Morrison. So there's like, if there isn't like aliens or imaginary friends involved in it somehow, then it just wouldn't make sense to him, which is fine. But yeah, it got picked up by Sci-Fi, which is really cool. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, this book, I mean, the timeline's all screwed now because we keep fucking with it, but I think this is one of the first books me and you actually talked about together.
Yeah, as being like one of the trades to buy or something, or
No, I'm saying like outside of the show. I think it's one of the first books that me and you like kind of bonded over together.
Yeah, because we might have been the only two reading it in the shop.
I think it was me, you, and the shop owner, and we were all talking about it. So
yeah, and I was like, yeah.
And great book. My only concern is this is most of the time I say, why are you making a movie when you can make a TV show? And in this case, I feel like, why are you making a TV show when you can make a movie?
Yeah, especially for a 4-issue miniseries.
I wonder how much they can pull out of that. And like, yeah, because it's the little girl's imaginary friend. So, I mean, do you do a new imaginary friend every season? Like, what do you? I have questions there, but I'm
here too. I hope they don't, you know, try to. But yeah, so like 4-issue miniseries would always work better as a movie, as we saw with Kingsman. Like that was 4 issues.
Yep.
Boom. Works well as a movie. The second show we want to talk about is Krypton, which it got green lighted. So it's going to become a show. We heard about it earlier, you know, Sci-Fi picked up Krypton. And apparently it's part of, unlike all the other DC shows that are on TV right now, it's part of the Man of Steel universe, the whole DC cinematic universe. It's a prequel to Man of Steel.
Yes, because the writer of Man of Steel is working on the show.
So does that mean we see like a Henry Cavill show up at some point?
Well, I'm going to steal it because I can't say it any better. So I'm going to steal it from Kevin Smith. You know what the most interesting part of Superman is? His grandfather you never heard of. And that's what the show is.
Well,
we'll see. It could be great. It could be not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a little thin.
Yep. All right. Now we're on to movies. Look, that was quick. There was some interesting news released. First of it being that, I mean, the Spider-Man movie isn't out yet. But we're getting a Venom movie. Now, I'm not sure. Is this a Marvel Universe Venom movie or is this a Sony?
No, or so Fox? I'll jump in there. Yeah, it is Sony. Sony's creating its own Spider-Man universe. So they were able to, they were leasing out Spider-Man to Marvel to be able to make Marvel movies, but Sony still owns Spider-Man and can still make a universe around Spider-Man, which is what they're planning on doing. So they're going to make the Venom movie, and there was one other they were planning. So this is going to be the first in the Spider-Man cinematic universe, which is really confusing because it's going to be Tom Holland as Spider-Man, who's in the MCU.
That's
going
to be it.
But this isn't in the MCU. I think this is a huge mistake.
Very confusing.
But the cast
Casting is Tom Hardy as Venom, which is awesome. But it's still very confusing. It's almost, these movies are now almost turning into like event comic books. It's like, what's part of the continuity and what's not anymore? I don't know.
My only real big comment there is Tom Hardy for everything.
Yeah, any part. Just,
he's probably my favorite actor out there right now. So
they should do like a whole, they should do like a, oh man, what was that movie where was it Chris Tucker played everyone in the family?
No, Eddie Murphy. It was
Eddie Murphy. Yeah, it was Eddie Murphy.
Professor.
Where he's like, Hercules.
Yeah, Professor something.
Yeah. But anyways, they should just do that Tom Hardy where he plays everyone. Like a family of 8 people, and he just plays everyone. Yeah, Hercules. I almost wanted to say Dr.
Nutty
Doolittle.
Professor.
Nutty Professor.
The Nutty Goddamn Professor.
That's it, yes. Oh my god. Yeah, good job. Because
the second movie was Meet the Clumps, and that's what kept coming into my brain. Meet the Clumps.
Oh my god. Yeah, so those movies, when Eddie Murphy was still relevant, whatever happened, yeah, that's what I want to see with Tom Hardy. Just everyone. Anyways, moving on.
So I know we're zooming through it. We got a ton of comic news.
Yeah, lots of comic book news.
So we had a nice sit down with a very smart and great talker, Mr. Miles Greb. So we're going to jump back in time to that, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
Yep. Okay. Well, so now you're a Patriots fan. Well, I was, I think it was about 8 p.m. when I was watching the Super Bowl, and I was at a party where there was all these Atlanta Falcon fans. Because when you're in Massachusetts, you're either a Patriots fan or you hate the Patriots.
Sure, fair enough.
So I'm at this party, and Chris and I had a deal that if whatever team wins, I have to pick a book. We pick a book for each other to read, a comic book for a whole year that you have to buy. And I was just going to pick Batman for him because he wasn't reading Tom King's new Batman run.
That was like a nice pick.
Yeah, it was going to be a good pick.
Yeah.
Well,
but of course, I'm an Eagles fan, so I'm not a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So around 8 or 9 p.m., he posted on my Facebook wall, like, oh, so what book should I have Mike read? Because obviously it was, they were down. And it was like not even, it was not the third quarter yet. Nothing had happened. And I'm like, wow, what a dick. And because I'm just sitting there trying to enjoy the game. So, yeah, after I heard that, I read what he said to me. I was like, wow, that's really mean. I was going to be nice to him. But after they won, I'm like, you know what? You can read My Little Pony for a year.
That's right. That's right. Damn right.
So now he has to go to the comic shop, purchase My Little Pony, and announce it to the comic book shop that he's purchasing My Little Pony for himself to read.
He shouldn't have doubted Tom Brady, man.
He's you can't do that.
I stand by. It's not that I doubted Tom Brady, but goddamn, if the Atlanta Falcons just called some run plays in that last quarter.
They were too intimidated by Tom Brady, though, man. He gives them, like, -4.
Just throw some goddamn, or run some goddamn run plays. It's okay. We got the Madden curse this year. You guys are done.
So I don't feel any bad about that. But on that note, let's introduce our guest.
Yeah,
we have a third person on the podcast today. If anybody didn't notice,
yes, we have Mr. Miles, and is it Greb or?
Yeah, Miles Greb. That's okay, right.
So I have been pronouncing it right.
That's right.
How you doing today, Miles?
I'm pretty good, man. I cut up my nose this morning when my phone broke randomly in my bed. You don't know how that happened, but I got my tea and my Sleeping Beauty cup.
There you go.
Working on some comics, so you know.
Good Sunday morning. I have my coffee and my Star Wars Episode 5 Space Slug mug.
Awesome, man! That's the big one.
Yeah, and Chris, what are you drinking out of? Anything? I'm sure you have a mug over there that's comic book themed.
Today I don't.
Or something.
I pulled this out of my refrigerator because I was like, I'm really fucking tired and I want to wake up. But it's I'm going to tell you, it's god-awful. Don't try it. It's the new Monster Mutant.
What is it? Ew. Zero that doesn't look good.
Those ones that you like can't see through, I always doubt them.
Yeah. So if you see me make like a weird face from time to time, it's because I'm taking a sip of it because I need something to drink.
It looks like the color of like when you cut open an alien, like as that's what does. That looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, like the like from the alien movies of the blood from the androids.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
It probably that's tastes exactly a lot like thinking. That too. It's pretty good.
It's probably the same stuff.
So, anyways, Miles is here because he writes comic books.
I do.
Yes.
So, Miles, so I was introduced to you through After the Gold Rush. Mm-hmm. I bought issue 1, and then most recently you did a Kickstarter for a variant cover of issue 1.
So, you know, we did number 1. That was pretty good, I think. And then number 2 came out several months later. And then Kickstarter did that Make 100 program where they're like, hey, they went out to their old backers or their old creators and asked us to like be part of the program where we make a limited run of something. So I thought it'd be cool to make a limited cover run of number 1. So we did that as well.
Yes. And that's how I also got issue number 2. So I have that as well.
Awesome.
I know you've done a bunch of other stuff. I'm still trying to figure out a way to finagle you into giving me a copy of that Doom book you wrote.
Yeah, I know, man. Everybody wants them. Giving me shit. I can't really sell them. You know, I don't own the rights to Doom. It was just, I am not a big fan of adaptations. Mm-hmm. And since they're going to make the movie, I just kind of like want to make my comment on how I thought you should do a Loyal adaptation. So Zach, who worked with me on my other series, Clovis, we worked on the Dune one together, and I think it turned out pretty good. I wish we could do more of it.
Yeah, I've read what you put on the website. Dune's one of my all-time favorite novel series. It's
me too, man.
So anyways, so After the Gold Rush is really the big book that I've been into by you that I really liked.
Thanks, man.
If you want to go into explanation about it, feel free to cut me off. But my whole perspective of that book is kind of a science meets early man story. I think that's really shown a lot in issue two, especially when our hero meets up with the guy who saves him, and he mistakes
Science
for
spoilers. I haven't got to issue two yet, man. Come on,
get on it. But right. I mean, am I on, or how do you see that book?
Yeah, so it's kind of about, you know, it's about the conflicts between science and religion, and it follows Scout, this girl right here, who is the last scientist. You know, she grew up on Titan, which is one of the moons of Saturn, and she grew up, you know, being a chemist and a biologist, part of the first mission there, and something happened and she was put in a cryo sleep and she ends up coming back to Earth. And when she comes back to Earth, it's not the Star Trek style, like utopia she was expecting it to be. It was really like agrarian and like a lush wilderness. And so she's kind of lost in that. And it's about her slowly reintroducing science to this world and meeting the people that are there. Mm-hmm. The main kind of crux of the story hasn't revealed itself yet. You'll start to see it in number three and you'll have the big kind of reveal in number four about what's going on. So the first two issues are kind of like easing you into the plot. I'm really excited for number three, which will be kickstarted in July.
Oh, cool. I'll definitely be there. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
I actually just bought the first issue online today, and I had just enough time to like read the issue before Chris and I started talking about what to do for the show today. And it was funny because I finished the first issue where it ends on the cliffhanger. And I was like, I was like, shit. I was like, ready to buy the second issue, like right away. I'm like, I don't have time to read it though. I'm like, so it definitely works. It works. So I mean, like, you read issue one, it's like now you got to go straight into issue two. So it's definitely well written. That's for sure.
Thanks, man. I love seeing my emails. Sometimes I see someone buy number one, and like 10 minutes later, they buy number two.
Yeah.
And it's like, I got you.
I got you. We got another one.
At least you know you're doing your job.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I don't know if you guys checked it out, but my other series is Clovis.
Yeah.
It's this guy right here. It's a pre-American Western with giant sloths and woolly mammoths. And it's Zach Hartong's the artist there. He's the guy who did the Dune comic with me.
Okay.
And this is going to be a full graphic novel, 100 pages. We just kind of released this floppy, so we had some stuff for cons. But it follows a young mother alone in the North American wilderness in 12,000 BCE looking for a lost son when she befriends a giant sloth, which she calls No Bear.
That's awesome. I wish I could befriend a giant sloth.
Yeah, man, but they're dead.
Yeah, but...
They're real cool, though. They're called Megatherium. They're like, they could be up to 12 foot tall. You know, they used to live around here in Montana area, kind of the northern part of North America.
So you know a lot about like all this stuff, and obviously the science, there's some structure to what you write for, you know, the science content. So what made you get into writing comics, and what made you do all this, you know, this natural history, this science fiction?
Sure. So I try to make all my comics as scientifically accurate as possible. I call them peer reviewed comics because in the back of my books, I always have a section people can write in and correct any of the information if it's inaccurate. The reason why I do that is because, You know, I was at Emerald City Comic Con, the big con up here in Seattle several years ago, and there was this trend where everyone wanted to, like, make comics more inclusive to all these different groups, which I thought was really cool, but I didn't really see any comics that were, like, kind of hard science-based or skeptic-based or atheist-based. And I was really kind of disappointed with how a lot of sci-fi writes about science stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, although I love Star Trek Voyager is an example where they just kind of, like, make up random words that have no meaning at all. And don't care about what they're saying is real.
Yeah,
and I mean,
yeah.
I get that from a writer's perspective. You're just trying to tell a story. But science is a really interesting and beautiful thing. And I think that it's disappointing that you feel like we have to make stuff up instead of trying to write within the parameters of the universe.
Man, that's awesome. This is awesome.
So, yeah, thanks, man. So I try to make After the Gold Rush, you know, set in reality. So, you know, it follows the laws of physics. To the best of my ability, all the chemistry will be accurate. You know, there's nothing supernatural. It's just... You know, there's this person, she's the last scientist, she comes back to Earth, and she's stuck in a field, and then she sees, you know, the ravaged throes of man return to chase her down, and we'll see how that goes.
That's awesome. I'm a chemical engineer, so I can appreciate all the
awesome, man.
All the cool. science talk.
There's some, so there's I some love reading stuff like in that. The second one, so tell me if I get it right. I'm all pretty right. sure.
So you don't need to sell me anymore, I'm already going to buy it. Don't worry.
I'm going to have to hand it to my mother now because she's also a chemical engineer.
Oh, I never knew that. Wow, yes. Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, the science stuff is kind of, like, the main crux of, like, what I try to do. I don't have a degree. I'm a computer engineer. I'm trying to be a bioengineer, but I don't quite have time to finish it. I did some more chemistry classes recently, but I've been so busy because, like, I write the book, and then I was organizing the March for Science, and then, like, I got to play Final Fantasy.
Yeah, priorities, man.
A lot of responsibilities.
which, by the way, play Fire Emblem. I saw your post. Play it. Start with Awakening. They're great games. They're not great stories, but they're great games.
Final Fantasy Tactics is my favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
And I like tactics games a lot, so I was thinking about playing them, but I've played a lot of like PS2 tactics games, which, I don't know, the story just doesn't live up for me, so it gets boring after a while. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about playing Fire Emblem, but if the story's decent enough, I'll give them a go.
Fire Emblem's all about systems, man. It has these really deep, integral systems that really suck you in.
Yeah.
So we have all this science talk, and this kind of goes right into my next question for you, because we were going to have you on, what, like 2 or 3 months ago? And life kind of got in the way, and you were doing a lot of work with the March for Science.
Yeah, that was stressful stuff, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about what you did for that?
Sure, so I was the organizer of the March for Science up here in Seattle, and I helped on the national front, too, as one of the liaisons for all the satellites. And I was kind of like the token skeptic guy in the March for Science, you know, because there was a lot of kind of pseudosciencey groups that thought that they were higher on the science totem pole than they, I guess, lower is actually historically accurate on the totem pole than they are. And so I was there to try to kind of promote that optimistic scientific message that I do with After the Gold Rush, and then also try to be a firewall against like the anti-GMO, anti-vaccine, anti-nuclear kind of pseudoscience groups that try to co-opt science a lot. So that's kind of what I was doing. And also just did a lot of the media work, making the, you know, buttons or images and posters and all that kind of stuff for the march. And then I gave a little speech at the march too, which I don't know. I guess it was cool.
That's pretty sweet, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that in itself has got to be a lot of work too. So.
Let me tell you, man, it was hard. So I had to delay my next Kickstarter, which is Esper, is my first fantasy story. I had to delay it because, you know, I did all the press for it and was going to release it in February. And then, then they put a climate denier in charge of the EPA. And then Donald Trump started just attacking all the scientists. And I was like, oh, fuck this. I got to do something. Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, we thank you for your effort.
Did the best it could, man. Hope it helps.
Yeah. We don't really talk politics on this show, but
that's all right.
as of lately, it
keeps creeping its way back in.
Well, it's hard because, like, you know, I work with a bunch of conservative guys, and they're all Republicans, and they don't really like Trump, you know? So it's not really like a normal Republican-Democrat thing. It's like, what the hell is this guy doing?
It's more of a what's happening right now.
It's a tough battle I keep having because I fall on the Republican side of things, and I look at him, I'm just like, well, there's things I like, but you're also a complete ass. And then there's things where I'm just like, you don't know what you're doing, and it's...
Yeah, so one thing in the March for Science, you know, like, people have this phrase, you know, science isn't a liberal conspiracy, and I was trying to get people not to say that, because there's a lot of views that aren't kind of in line with the scientific consensus that the left has as well.
Yep.
And so, you know, I was trying to show everybody science is for everyone, you know, and there's tons of Republicans that like science as well. And, you know, they don't feel well represented by Donald Trump. They don't feel like he's representing their love for science. So I think it's important that we make science a centrist issue that it should be. And that, of course, science will be politicized because it involves funding, but we should try to have it be as neutral and reasonable as possible.
Yes.
Yeah. That's just, I mean, this is great. This is
something I want to see more of, because I don't know if you got into the whole Bill Nye thing, but even when I agreed with him on everything on that show, I had a hard time because I'm just like, I need you to just to present the facts, man, and try to keep the politics out of it.
I'm not going to lie. We'll talk about the new Bill Nye show really quick. I loved Bill Nye growing up.
Me too.
This new show is, I can't even watch it. I just...
Yeah, it messes up science communication 101, which is not to tell people what's right, but explain to them the method, right? Because science isn't a collection of facts, it's a method. And he doesn't really go into that very well. He does a couple times, like when he talks about the pseudoscience of some medicines and shows like the vinegar effect. That's fine. But like, they have a conversation about nuclear power, which is well demonstrated to be the cleanest and safest power we have. Yep. But then what does he say to the panelists on this? He's like, well, we don't like it. I didn't only watch the first episode.
Yeah,
it irked me so much.
Yeah,
so it's just like, I don't know, man. You should have better conversations.
Yeah.
So that's kind of trying to do that with your comic, is what I'm seeing. Like, you're presenting all the facts and keeping yourself within reason.
I'm trying, man.
Yeah.
Hopefully, people like it. So
that's awesome. So the next Kickstarter, the fantasy story. Can we talk about that a little bit, or?
Yeah, sure. That's Espers. Let's take a little closer here. There's Larry. Oh, yeah, this is okay. Espers, and it is a comic theology. So it tells a creation mythology, the birth of the world. It starts in this infinite nothingness, and then Lotan, the giant serpent. He's like an infinite kind of classical sea serpent, like Leviathan from Final Fantasy, and he awakes in this, and he's really wise about everything he's aware of, but he's also very ignorant about much that could be or that is in the universe. So as he comes upon any new creation, that creates a new god, and then like he becomes like really aware of that thing but knows nothing else. So like when he first breaks the sphere and goes up into what becomes the sky, like it creates the sky god. You know, then they have a conversation where they're both trying to understand what it means to exist in this universe. And this continues ad nauseum as all the gods are created in the story until eventually, like, this infinite regress happens and it will unwind the universe. As, you know, as theologies are, it doesn't make sense. Like, well, if this happened, then who created this? Then who created this?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's like the kind of
like Confucius coming out of an egg. Like, who had, where did
that come from? Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, God created the universe. Well, how did he create it? Well, he always existed. Well, what does it mean to always exist? What do you mean? He's like, well, he exists outside of time. You're like, well, if he exists out of time, then how can he affect things? Because he's not temporal. And they're like, well, shut up. So like,
well, shut up.
So it's kind of a fantasy story that starts off as a fantasy story, and then you'll see the unwinding of it. So if you like, just if you don't want all the kind of philosophy stuff, you can just enjoy it for being kind of a high fantasy story, kind of in line with the Silmarillion. But as it goes on, you'll see kind of the more skeptic-y kind of approach that I take to my books. And the artist for it is Chris Lewis Lee, who did that variant cover of After the Gold Rush. And he lives in the English countryside. And you can kind of tell that by his artwork, because it's like very kind of charming and folksy, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It really works for this book. And the whole like dragon or serpent like puking up all the aquatic life is
pretty awesome. Makes the sea life. Yeah,
the sea life. That picture or panel is just fantastic.
There's a whole other side of that, so that's going to be a spread page. Mm-hmm. That's just the left side, so there's a really cool right side too.
Oh man, I'm excited.
Yeah.
So I know you had to put a delay on this. Can we expect this on Kickstarter soon? Or
it's currently on Kickstarter.
It's on Kickstarter.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yep, there's 11 days to go.
Well, it's got my money, so
that's weird. So we had to delay it, which is kind of disappointing, but that's okay because the book is pretty much finished. We just need the money to print it and, you know, pay all the artists and everything now. So once it gets funded, hopefully it does. It's a little over halfway now. Then we'll be able to, you know, get it out pretty quick to people.
Awesome.
Yeah. And if people want, you can get my other books on the Kickstarter as well, like After the Gold Rush or Clovis. You can get them kind of bundled into rewards with Esper. So if you want to check out all the stuff, you can do it through the Kickstarter.
Very cool.
Cool. And you have Clovis and After the Gold Rush on your website as well, correct?
Yep, you can get them both there. Like I said, we have the first 22 pages of Clovis and that little floppy that I showed you here, which I have about 400 copies or so left. Most of them are sold, but I got some left. And I got a bunch of After the Gold Rush because we did our second printing. And eventually Clovis will be a full graphic novel, but that'll take a while to finish, you know. So.
Yeah.
And my Dune comic, the 10 pages of that is on the website for free, so people could check out that as well.
Yeah, and that's really good. If you like Dune, even if you never heard of Dune, go check it out, and maybe it'll get you interested in the novel as well. So he also does link to the novel where you can buy that.
Yeah, because I'm not trying to write anything in Frank Herbert's universe. I'm just trying to present it kind of accurately as I can through the comic medium. And so I don't want people just to read this and not read the book. You know, please read the book, because no one's ever going to be able to adapt it appropriately. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
I just want people to read the book. So please do so.
Yeah. If you've never read that book, that is top of my list. My father introduced me to that book when I was in middle school. And I remember being like, I don't get this, and throwing it to the side. Then years later, grabbing it again and just enthralled by it. Got through like the first three books in less than a year.
Third one's my favorite, Children Dune.
Yeah. And then even being, we were so hardcore that we were watching the sci-fi TV show.
Sure.
I like forgot that was a show. Wow.
I like parts of that show. I don't think it can like handle how subtle the universe is, but it gets some stuff right.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of worried, especially for those large arcing novels for like the Dark Tower movie, because there's so much happening that they're going to throw into one movie, and it's just I don't know, it scares me.
Well, I mean, like Lord of the Rings, the first one was the best one,
yeah.
But as they have to like continue on, they just kind of fell apart. You know, like, so Fellowship's a fantastic movie, and Two Towers is pretty good. And then Return of the King is kind of like, I don't know.
How do we wrap all this up?
They couldn't really handle all that happened to wind up the story. And so it kind of fell into like a dumb action movie.
Yeah.
And then the Hobbit movies are a crime against humanity.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I stopped after the first one. I couldn't do it anymore.
That was really hard for me, man, because like I read The Hobbit when I was in like second grade, and I've been reading it ever since, and it means a lot to me. And so like watching them just treat it like that was, I don't know.
Yeah, it was. Oh man, me too, because I read, that was one of the first books I read when I was younger, and it was like this introduction in this fantasy world and all this lore, and that's what gets you started, you know. And then you start looking at, oh, what's D&D about, and what are these things, and start branching out and all the other things. But like to see them treat it as just like a money grab. It was like, oh man.
Well, they do all these things that are so odd. So like they have the elf girl, who I understand there's not a lot of female characters in the story, so they wanted to introduce one, which, you know what, that's not a big deal. But then they make her like really a flat character, and she's just there to flirt with the guys anyway. Yeah. So like, why even
why even have her?
We wanna be more inclusive, let's make a female character. Oh, that's great. Let's make her kind of a sexist trope. Oh, okay. And like having her have a relationship with a dwarf is terrible, because I mean, Gimli and Galadriel have that kind of moment. It's the first kind of like bridging between the dwarves and the elves, since they didn't help fight Sauron, you know, in the second age. And it's like a really big deal. And they just like, oh, who gives a shit? Like, and then I don't know if you saw the third movie, but all of a sudden Hoshai Halud shows up.
No, I didn't get that far. I did not get that far.
Yeah, there's fucking sandworms in it.
Oh, man. It was just like, they just went off the deep end.
What upsets me as a writer is, you know, like, you didn't create these stories. You know, this isn't, you're a steward of these stories.
Yes,
you got to shepherd them, you know? Like,
yep.
I mean, if you want to make an adaptation to make a bunch of money, man, I get wanting that money, you know, you need that money, but just have respect for the intellectual property. Have respect for Tolkien. It's not your story.
What upsets me is that I personally find, I found The Hobbit was my favorite of those books. And then they pulled, when, as soon as they said it's going to be three movies, I was just like, all right, well, this is not going to end well.
For anyone.
Because there's not enough there for three movies. I mean, you could. But
I think they could have done it in three movies. I think they could have. But, I mean, like, I don't know. You can expand that stuff. And they did a lot of the stuff that's in the back of the book, like the Necromancer and stuff. Yeah. But what they did was stupid. So, I mean, I don't know.
So, speaking of movies, I mean, do you have, like, a favorite sci-fi movie or...
My favorite sci-fi movie is probably 2001: A Space Odyssey.
I figured from like from after the Gold Rush and stuff and what you're saying, I'm like you probably is a huge fan of Space Odyssey.
So my favorite movie of all time is The Royal Tenenbaums, but that's kind of different.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit the category.
I mean, Empire Strikes Back is more of a fantasy movie, but yeah, that's really up there.
I mean, Chris and I can talk about Empire Strikes Back for
five episodes. We want to get in the Star Wars talk. We can get in the Star Wars talk.
Yeah.
I'm so stressed out about this new movie. I can't really handle it.
Yeah, The Last Jedi. And, you know, it's funny because Chris and I started this podcast out. It never used to be the Fortress of Comic News. It used to be like C3PO podcast. It was a play on C3PO podcast. Sure. And then we're like, I don't know if we can. Yeah, we can never figure out how to say it, which is one of the reasons we changed the name. But we're like, you know, we can talk about Star Wars all the time, but it's like, we like talking about Star Wars, but I don't know if everyone wants to hear us talk about Star Wars all the time.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't know, man. I'm one of those guys who read like every single EU book and like bought every Star Wars encyclopedia at book fair since I was a little kid to know like everything that Luke did.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and like them cutting that away from me kind of hurt because it made the universe really small all of a sudden. Like I learned all this stuff, and then like, well, none of that matters. So, sorry. And I'm like, oops. Okay. So I watched the new movie, and they're like, look, we don't care enough to be creative. We just didn't want to fail. So we didn't have a story to tell, but we made like four or five really good characters.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, okay, that's fine. We have these characters. I guess the first movie is pretty good. By first, I mean seven.
Yeah.
We'll see what you're going to do next, right? Because the next story is really good. Then that makes seven a pretty darn good movie because it gave us the new characters. Like Poe, and they're all really cool. Not for Rey. But then they show us the new trailer and Luke's like, yeah, the entire point of Lucas making these movies and all the metaphysical ways the Force works are probably not true because edgy 14-year-olds like to say that the Jedi are wrong. So, fuck you.
Kind of like, I don't. It's hard to figure out right now. I mean, we talked about the trailer on here before, but the whole Jedi need to end thing. It's really, I don't know, out of a trailer that doesn't show anything, it's a pretty bold statement to make. But it could mean any.
I mean, maybe it's a red herring, maybe they're talking with us, because like, they try to make it seem like Poe is the main character and the Force-sensitive person in the old trailers, right? There's a bunch of misinformation, so who knows? But what I'm mainly concerned about is there's kind of this misconception of how the Force works, probably because of the KOTOR video game for Xbox. Because you can't trust Xbox kids to get anything right, and so like I mean they have this idea.
I'm fine with that because I have a PS4. Chris has an Xbox.
This guy's just hating all over me. I'm not inviting him over again.
The only reason I continue the console war shit is just because like because of them there's a lot less JRPGs for a while, you know, because they like kind of changed the market. So it kind of bugged me, but otherwise I don't care.
PS4 so I can play my Dragon Quest.
Yeah, man, Dragon Quest. I got 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the NES. I just got 3 and 4. I never got to play them yet, so I'm excited to.
Those are gems.
But anyway, anyway, so like I said, with the Force, you know, it's supposed to be that the Force is like, it's like a vibration. It needs to be in harmony. And the light side seeks to be in line with the harmony of the Force. You know, the Jedi aren't just a bunch of religious dogma. It's not like they're the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
What they say to do to be in line with the Force is evidence based upon getting in harmony with the light side. The dark side are the people who use the Force to their own liking and don't care about the harmony. So they create the disharmony, which puts the universe in balance or out of balance. So there's this misconception for some reason that balance means equal light side and dark side, which is completely wrong. Balance is supposed to mean no dark side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so like this idea that the Jedi were wrong doesn't really make any sense with the way that Lucas specifically set up the whole universe. So it seems like to me like they're just doing fan service to KOTOR fans. And I don't know, I think it makes the universe less interesting to take away the way that the Force works and just make it. That's just an opinion.
See,
for anyone that doesn't know,
I was.
We should probably explain that KOTOR means Knights of the Old Republic, the video game.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, it's a great game. I just think it's kind of like really fun fan fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I mean, first of all, you can't really quote the game as like things that happen because it's a choose your own adventure story. So it's like,
well,
I mean, it's fun.
I'm like you. I was, you know, I still to this day pick up all the extended use stuff. And when Disney bought it, I got it. I was like, okay, you bought this big thing and you didn't want to be kind of funneled into what was already there. You wanted to do something new. So I got, you know, let's clear continuity and do this. So, and I was all aboard. And so far, the extended universe, they've done a great job. And I really liked 7. Knowing that all 7 was fan service to be like, hey, guys,
sure,
we want to show you that we're not going to do the prequel movies, so here's episode 4 again. And then Rogue One was really great.
I didn't like Rogue One.
What was that?
I didn't really like Rogue One.
Oh, I love
Rogue One. I find the two leads to be really flat characters, and like you kind of know from the beginning that they're going to die.
Yeah.
And they don't really have any interesting ethics. And they didn't do anything that changed the universe because we know how the universe played out. So it just kind of seemed really pointless to me. Like, I mean, I don't really know what I'm supposed to gain from them. The parts of the movie that I liked the most are when the Skywalkers were there. Like, the scenes where Leia or Vader was there. I was like, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
Because they had nothing to do with the plot.
So. Yeah.
See, I like a good war movie, and that's what that movie was.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it is a decent war. Yeah. It's just that Star Wars was supposed to be a high fantasy epic, I think that this is just kind of a money play.
I'm just a really big Donnie Yen fan, and I like explosions. Sometimes I just like to check out my brain and watch something that, you know, like it was like, you know, like a Saving Private Ryan, not to compare the epicness of that movie.
And I can see that. That's just not my kind of thing. So
exactly.
Seeing it have a Star Wars brand, kind of like, whatever. They just made an action movie and called it Star Wars. Which is fine every now and then, but this is going to happen every year, right? And Star Wars is a really beautiful and powerful mythos, but I don't know how much, like, capitalism it can hold up on its back until it breaks.
Yeah,
we'll see. Because I'm of the mind that give it to me every month and I'll be happy.
Sure.
But
consume.
But I'm a sucker for Star Wars, so
I think the mystique of waiting for the sagas is really important. Mm-hmm. I think it gave us a lot of imagination and mystery, a lot of kind of bullshit fan theory, and a lot of what could happen, you know. And then like you grow up, you had it, you had this gap. And then it's coming out, and now you get to like be excited with your children, right? There's kind of this like thing that was going on with Star Wars. It was an important part of our culture. Like it comes out, it gives us this new important American mythology, which is like tied all the way from the Greeks to the Babylonians. It's like all of our stories combined into Star Wars, right? Like it's the crux of like the main human story. And then you wait, and then the new one comes out. But now that's gone. Now it's every year there's Star Wars. And I just worry that it won't be the same after a while. I mean, maybe I'm dead wrong.
Yeah.
But,
that's,
but I don't know. I just worry.
Justifiable.
I mean, it's because at this point, I know we've been talking a lot about Star Wars. We'll get back to.
I try not to.
Yeah.
Podcast the month and not talk to me about Star Wars. It's always.
It is worrisome, though. I mean, after we go to this trilogy, they've already talked about another trilogy, and it's like, at some point, you need to find a stopping point for us to really appreciate the epic that is Star Wars and not just keep pumping out movies.
They're also going to have a Yuuzhan Vong kind of event, right? It doesn't have to be the Yuuzhan Vong, but, like, I mean, you can't just continue having the Empire retake over all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it was important to have the out-of-universe kind of, oh, we're here to fuck up the joint thing. Like, but that I don't know if Disney's willing to do that.
That is the one thing, is if I walk out of episode 8 or 9 and another Death Star blows up, that's when I'm going to start being like, all right, come on. Like, there's so many great stories we can do here. Why do we have to blow up another giant ball?
I mean, they did that a bit in the EU too, and it was stupid then. Kevin J. Anderson's books generally considered the worst ones.
So where I was trying to go with that was episode 8, when he talks about the Jedi needs to end. I think he's talking about basically rebranding the Jedi into kind of the Gray Order and trying to find what we think of as a true balance of the Force. Like, you can't have good without evil. I think that's what he sees.
But that's not how it's supposed to work, man. And if that is how they're going to make it work, then I'm out.
Cash me out, I'm done.
I don't want to be in that universe where it's just like, who knows what's right and wrong, man. Ethics are so flimsy. I mean, yeah, the Jedi kept peace for 50,000 years. But, I mean, you know, one time they didn't do that good at keeping peace, and so they're equal to the Sith. Who, you know, so this once there was a good Jedi named Anakin who became evil, and 10 minutes later he started killing children. So who's to say that's any worse than Obi-Wan? Who tries to keep peace, you know? They're both the same.
From my perspective, I'm the hero. But this is great. We haven't had a good Star Wars discussion with any of our guests, and it's good to have someone that's, I mean, a big fan like us. So
I'm an annoying fanboy.
No, it's fine. It's nice to hear a good, like, a different perspective, and having, like, some reasoning behind, like, why you didn't like it or why. Yeah. You know, you feel this way you did about it.
See, I'm going to love talking with you, because I'm the Kevin Smith fanboy, where it's just like, oh, yeah, like, that's awesome. Just show me more.
Sure. I get that, man. I like the power of the myth itself.
Yeah.
And I think that the myth grows in the absence of new information. And I think that you'll see that you'll watch a Star Wars movie in a couple of years that you won't like, and it'll be boring. And that'll be a weird feeling. I mean, so, like, Phantom Menace wasn't great, right? Because it wasn't directed that well. Lucas kind of lost a bit of his touch. But what you can't say about Phantom Menace is they didn't try to do something new. Because they did.
Yep.
It showed us a bunch of new stuff that we actually like Naboo's cool, right? People like Naboo.
Yeah.
Like, the pod racing scene was cool. Zabarax, Darth Maul's race, they're cool.
Yeah.
Or Sin is cool, and Qui-Gon's cool, bunch of cool shit we've never seen before. All the battle droids, all the new technology, the way that Princess Amidala's ship looks, the silvery look, I mean, all this new stuff, right? And yeah, that story wasn't great, but they've expanded that in other stuff, and we got good stories. It's because it was good myth-making. Mm-hmm. Attack of the Clones is really weird green screen. It's probably the worst Star Wars movie, right?
Yeah.
But even still, there's a bunch of new species and stuff we got out of that. We got Dooku. You know, you got to see Yoda fight. You got to see, like, the big arena battle, cool monsters and stuff, you know, like, almost like watching a Hueyhausen film, you know, like Clash of the Titans or something.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of new stuff. Cartoon.
Yeah, and Revenge of the Sith was actually not too bad.
Yeah.
I actually think Revenge of the Sith is better than Episode 7. Not in a lot of, like, kind of objective film ways. It's filmed better, Episode 7 is. But 3 is pretty emotional. I mean, people mock it because of the memes, but, I mean, you're watching the movie the first time, and Obi-Wan's just like, you fucking betrayed me, man!
Yeah.
And Anakin's like, but I'm stupid now! And he's like, I know! Why do you do this? And, like, you know, and, like, he cuts his legs off, and he's just like, you're my best friend, man, what the fuck? And Anakin's like, I'm totally lost to the dark side, but who's to say which one's better or worse, right?
Yeah.
See, that's the point. It doesn't make the who's to say thing don't make any sense. Fucking guy turns evil, gets his legs cut off, didn't work out good. I don't know. I liked Revenge of the Sith well enough.
And I think I liked Revenge of the Sith more out of that trilogy.
That's definitely my favorite.
The whole scene when, like, Palpatine is sitting with Anakin, and he's using all the dark side to manipulate him, and he's telling the whole story of, you know, Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Yeah,
they're watching the Final Fantasy X Blitzball shit going on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that whole scene's really good. Or even the scene when Anakin's, like, in his room for, like, a minute, and there's, like, almost no talking, and he's watching the sunset on a Coruscant, and Padme's, like, asleep in the bed. I mean, they, like, took a moment to just have an emotional shot where there's, like, no action or dialogue, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I liked it decent enough. It just, you know, it's a bit tacky, and Grievous was kind of, like, eh.
Oh, see, whatever. See, Grievous as a design and a character that I followed on the Clone Wars cartoon, he's probably one of my favorite Star Wars villains. I think he's the most underused Star Wars character in the
movie. I liked him better. I like the animated Clone Wars cartoon, the 2D one.
Oh, the 2D, yeah, 2D one's so good.
I've been trying my damnedest to watch the 3D one, but I can never watch three episodes in a row. Because, I watch two, and then the writing just makes me roll my eyes, and then my eyes hurt.
If you get into, like season one's kind of tough, because season one, they're really trying to be a kid's show.
But I'm in chronological order.
If you listen to interviews with the creators, by season two and three, they're like, well, Lucas comes in and says, we should do this with that. And they're just like, okay, so how do we make that into a full story? And they actually do something cool and unique and start telling, like, great side stories.
I like the kind of anti-pacifism episode when the people in the field have the droids coming down and they, like, wouldn't fight them.
Yep.
Apparently George Lucas's daughter wrote that, is what I've heard. And I like that.
Okay.
And it's weird being an EU fan watching all the Mandalorian stuff, because I'm like, this planet is destroyed. What the hell's going on here? But I kind of like Obi-Wan's flirtatious relationship with her. Because it shows him being a good Jedi. Because, like, you know, I've seen some people on Reddit be like, oh, it's stupid, the Jedi say you can't love, because what's wrong with that? That's oppressive. You know, it's not what they're saying. They're saying you can't have possessive love because it makes you do irrational things. And it's totally fine for normal people to do that. But if you want to dedicate your life to the Force, this will be bad for you. And so Obi-Wan understands that. You know, he's into that chick. He totally has feelings for her. But he knows that he needs to serve the Force and the greater good of the Republic, so he doesn't bang her. And, you know, so I like that stuff. Azuka, I don't know, she's kind of an interesting character, but it's so weird watching her be kind of like just a moody teenager and also a Jedi. I don't think it makes any sense. Like, she needs to calm her shit. You know, like, she can't be so moody. She'd go to the dark side for sure.
Yeah, and I don't know. And her story when Anakin finally turns and she sees that and she starts seeing the dark side in him is really an interesting turn for her, because that's when she kind of gets rid of all that. And if you see her, if you watch Rebels now, she's in Rebels. And
yeah, her.
The whole crux of that season is, like, you know, her fighting her former master and not realizing it. And then finally being like, oh shit, this is Anakin. And so, there's great stuff there.
I'm a bit ignorant here because I haven't watched it all. I'm watching it through in chronological order, not by season, so I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the only way I could see that series ending in a way that I personally would like it is she has to confront Anakin, and then, you know, she's unsure about the light side, but then see what the dark side's done to him, so come back to the light side, because I know she goes gray or whatever, which isn't really a thing. And then Anakin needs to kill her. Like, she needs to die from Anakin, because otherwise it ruins the tragicness of Anakin's fall, which they already kind of messed up, you know?
Yeah.
I tried to watch the series, and there's an order you can watch it where it, like, cuts out all the fluff or all the filler episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them, like, some of the droids episodes are really bad. They're just, it's painful to watch.
Some of them I've watched, I mean, like, I don't know why I'm watching them. So, like, so he won't go blow up Coruscant. I'm like, well, I know Coruscant doesn't blow up.
Yeah.
I know Grievous doesn't die here.
Yeah.
So why am I watching? Like, nothing could possibly happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this goes back to my original point. All those years I was watching this show and I was reading the books, the comics. So it's like Star Wars never really ended for me.
Sure.
It kept going just in different manners.
It's also weird because, like, you know, we had our episode 7. It was Heir to the Empire.
Oh, and yes, we did.
You know, and so, like, and then we had, you know, the twins and, you know, Chewie's death and the Yuuzhan Vong and Star Wars Legacy. So, like, I felt like we had Star Wars and it was going all the way here. And then they're like, fuck that. We're going all the way back here. And I'm like, okay. And even if people think it's stupid, you have to compete with what was already in our heads. Like, yeah. Episode 7 isn't better than Enter the Empire. So right now, I'm in a negative, right? Like you took something away from me, and I haven't got something that's sufficient back yet. And I mean,
it's not equal exchange.
Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe, I mean, because not all the EU is good. There were some bad books in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
but, I mean, like, I don't know if I want to live in a world without Mara Jade. Like, I don't know if I can live in that world. I hope that in 8, Rey makes a lightsaber, and it's purple, right? Like, she makes her actual lightsaber. Yeah. And, like, they don't have to show a bunch of Marvel stuff. You just see Luke's face, and he's just like, that was the color of your mother's. You know, and, like he cries a single tear or something. Like, you don't even have to say Mara Jade. That alone, I'll probably cry in the theater.
Yeah.
See, now if that doesn't happen, I'm going to be pissed.
I would just cry because it's purple, and I love purple. That's why I would cry.
Right.
It's a good purple. I will say this: I told Chris a story when I was down at they opened a Star Wars store down at Disney Springs in Orlando. Oh,
cool.
And they have, like, everywhere you look is Star Wars, and they have the build your own lightsaber section, and they do have purple there, along with the blue and the green. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, thank God, that is awesome.
They changed the stuff. So it used to be that the colors corresponded to the crystals, and the crystals were in certain locations, yeah. Right? And that explains, like, the color differences. But now apparently it's not that anymore. They totally retconned it.
They're all one crystal, I guess.
So the color, it depends on, like, the attitude and mood of the person who attuned the force crystal.
That's pretty interesting.
Going along with the emotions of the force user.
So does that mean, like, Mace Windu's a pimp? Is that how that works? Like, the purple?
Well, I don't know. That's a lot of knowledge there, too. Samuel Jackson, you know, has a story he always tells about how he's the one who invented the purple lightsaber because he wanted one, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of bullshit, because Mara Jade had one well before that.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, like, they can't say that Mara wasn't, like, a high-level canon. George Lucas specifically endorsed the marriage of Mara and Luke.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Let's not talk about Star Wars anymore, man. I just fucking go on. And on.
we could be here for another 2 hours.
So we're going to announce our new Star Wars podcast with the three of us.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we covered most of your stuff that's going on right now, right? I mean, we're talking about Dune after the Gold Rush.
Go back, Asper's people. It's good. It got monster people in it and fish.
Yeah,
Earth
everyone.
Gods.
Go back, Espers. Go to the tiers that give you after the Gold Rush, Clovis, whatever other books he's given with the tiers, so that this book gets funded, because I want this book. It's all about me.
Yeah, it's also just it'll be nice to have more books on my table, you know, because, like, you know, I go to all the Comic Cons, and After the Gold Rush sells really well. People love After the Gold Rush, but, you know, I buy two, but that's $10, and $10 is great. Thanks for your $10, but costs a lot to go to these cons, costs a lot to airfare. So the more books I have done, I can recoup the cost of doing cons, because I'm just an indie guy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people seem to like my books, but I don't have a publisher. It's all me. So, you know, being able to write more stories is good, because I want After the Gold Rush to be 25 issues. I have a lot of story to tell. So the more kind of, like, stuff I can get going, the more I can devote into After the Gold Rush. And I think it's an important story, because we don't really have a lot of optimistic science fiction anymore. And I'm trying my best to kind of bring back that Carl Sagan, Gene Roddenberry stuff to science fiction.
Science fiction today seems to be more the dystopian future kind of.
Yeah, which I think is too bad, because, I mean, despite what people may think, pretty much every year is better than the year before. Life expectancies go up, poverty goes down, knowledge goes up, you know, rights go up. Yeah, there's little dips, but I mean, like, the curve is definitely up. Like, that's just a fact. And so, I mean, it's good to, like, be critical of problems and be worried about things that can happen, but, like, don't lose sight of our goals and don't lose sight of our success, because I think that's really too bad.
So
that's good.
So the website
Gold Rush.space.
Yeah, that's right. That space.
And where can everybody find
it? But I just didn't.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at @GoldRushComic, or if you just Google Miles Greb, I'm the only Miles Greb in the world, so you'll find my Instagram or my Facebook. But I'm on Twitter a lot, so check that out. And if you want to, you know, look at my books and stuff, you can go to AfterGoldRush.space. I have my blog there, a couple podcasts, and there's a free web comic for After the Gold Rush, which follows Scout growing up. You can check out my Patreon if you want to have like early access to all my stuff. I post like all the inks that we can make in the books, and all those people get the books for free, so you can check that out too. And you know, check out Esper's on Kickstarter, of course.
Yes,
awesome.
Check out Esper's, get cool stuff like this.
Natasha did that. She has a great book about lesbian Vikings that has been doing pretty well, and she did that art for me.
Lesbian Vikings? Yeah. Oh man, I didn't know that was a thing. That I'm excited.
There's a little bit too much excitement there.
I've been going through life waiting for a lesbian Vikings thing to happen, to finally hear that. Okay, sold.
Well,
I didn't expect today to go as it did with all, you know, I mean, we had some deep conversations. I love talking science. I love talking Star Wars. So I think this is a great, it was a great episode for the podcast. So thanks for being on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for me too. We loved having you. And next project, we'll be contacting you again because you were a great talk, man.
Sure, yeah, man. We'll get you back on here.
I don't have a specific date, but this summer, after the Gold Rush 3 will be kickstarted. So you guys can check that out.
Okay. Awesome.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for being on.
Thanks. See you soon, dude.
And thanks again to Miles for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Everyone go check out that Kickstarter.
What a guy.
Awesome.
Wow. Not very often do we have that much Star Wars talk with a guest. And it's nice to have, you know, a writer's perspective. Because, I mean, you have conversations with him. You're like, damn, he's a writer because... Well, he was definitely
the yin to my yang because he was very skeptical and like, I don't know, I want it to be this. And I'm just like, I want Star Wars all over me all the time.
Why is Darth Vader murdering people? I don't care. I just give me it.
There's a lightsaber there. It's awesome.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, maybe there's some, you know, deeper thought put into this that, you know, someone has made a career out of. And
No,
we don't like to think about those things. That was some great comic.
We have a shit ton of comics news, which I love.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
Mike, I'm gonna let you start this one off because this has got you bathing all over.
Yeah, oh man. I took this info, I threw it in my bathtub, and I sulked in it for like 2.5 hours. So think about that image. Chris almost spit out his...
Can't unthink that image now. Yeah. Thank you.
I thought he was going to spit out his Mountain Dew. I don't know if it's because of my story or because it's really gross, whatever he's drinking. Or his monster. He's drinking the new monster.
It's fucking disgusting.
Anyways. Actually. Yeah. So the Doomsday... Okay, so let's talk about this comic that came out called Flash 22, okay? Now... If you weren't excited for the whole button crossover event with how stupid that sounds, the cover Flash 22 brings back an iconic character that we haven't seen since it's been retconned in the Earth 2 series. But now we get Jay Garrick on the cover. So if you're not sold on this story and you see Jay Garrick, the original Jay Garrick, well, he's got a new costume, but I mean, that's irrelevant. But on the cover of this book, yeah, take it, buy it, read it. Because I've been waiting for Jay Garrick to make an appearance. I'm waiting for the JSA actually to come back. Please, please let this be the start of it. We talked about this for like a year now. We want the JSA back. So this book, we find out, you know, there's an epilogue at the end of it. There's this blue hand picking up the button. I mean, who else has a blue hand? It's not Black Lightning.
It's done in the art style of Watchmen.
Yeah, it's done the art style, and it's a quote from Watchmen, which gives way to this Doomsday Clock event, which reunites Gary Frank and Jeff Johns. The Earth One team up is back. Batman Earth One team up, who we think is one of the best team ups ever. I mean, Gary Frank's art is so fantastic, and Jeff Johns writing about DC mixed with Dr. Manhattan as he goes on his existential crisis to like figure out why there's even any meaning to life, and Geoff Johns is writing it. Holy shit. I can't. I'm sweating right now. I'm so excited. It might be all the coffee I just drank. It might be the DC Doomsday event we're talking about right now. It might be a combination of both, but this is has all my money. This it has the potential to be something great. And I know I said this about Batman Eternal a couple years ago, but this is a whole other...
just ignore it. We're moving forward.
It's hard to go into this with low expectations because we haven't seen the Watchmen since the before Watchmen books came out. We all know there was like a 50-50 shot whether you picked one up and liked it or not.
I love that event.
Yeah, some were better than others. But this is going to be epic. And that's all I can say.
So this is what I'm going to say. We'll do.
You can probably explain what the event is. I don't know, but
we'll do our review of Flash 22 later because I really want to get into that. But this is definitely chapter 3 of that story, which I think I predicted last week or 2 weeks ago. What's great about this is it's not just DC versus Watchmen. It's what it really is looking into is if you're reading Superman or more importantly Action Comics right now and have been since the DC Rebirth, they're going to take in all that stuff that's been happening between Mr. Oz and Superman and the capture of Doomsday and bring that all together into this event. And what's really important, and this is coming from a Marvel fan and somebody who's kind of on the edge with these event books, but at the same time, I love them so much. It's 4 issues. That's it.
4.
There's no side issues. There's no parallel book going with it. It's 4 issues. That's the story. We're done. That's it. So I have high hopes for this. It's one of the best team-ups that DC has. One of the best team-ups in all of comics.
Yes, he said it. He said it. You heard him write it down. Take note. Save that audio clip. I'm using it at a later date.
It's true. I mean, it's 100% the best team-up DC has. And then just everything these two have done together has been amazing. Not to mention separately. I mean, Geoff Johns is a hell of a writer. I mean, he did that amazing Avengers run. And
that's the only thing you can note. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah,
and Gary Frank's just—he's got to be probably the best artist out there right now. Takes for fucking ever to write a book or to draw a book, but it's amazing when it comes out.
And I saw him at New York Comic Con. I saw him sitting there with his headphones in the corner of the room. Gary Frank, nobody. I mean, he doesn't have time to sit there and sign, or he'll sign for you, but he doesn't do sketches. You have to get your commissions in with him. But I went to the corner of the room and I said, and he's a very awkward individual. He's an Englishman. And I shook his hand. I said, you draw the best things I've ever seen. And he said, thank you. Went back to drawing. And that's all I needed. He just had to know that it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is 100% going to be my most look forward to book come November. There's no question about it. The only thing that could possibly beat it, I don't even know what could possibly beat it.
I don't know either.
I don't think there's anything Marvel could do right now that they could announce that could be like, yep, this is going to be more important than DC versus
Marvel. Almost like what we talked about earlier, like with the whole legacy of Star Wars, waiting for the movies and stuff. We've been waiting, what? I mean, I haven't been waiting since the 80s for the Watchmen to come back and resurface and be relevant. And I don't even know if they've been waiting for it, but now we know that they're going to become an integral part of the DC universe. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Just think, I'm sure a lot of people after Alan Moore's Swamp Thing were like, oh, no, not my Swamp Thing. But then you get people like Scott Snyder writing Swamp Thing, and you're like, holy shit, this is an amazing story. We're going to get these really good writers writing good, I mean, well, maybe. We might get stories branching out from the Watchmen characters with the best writers at DC. Take my money.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say.
So,
okay.
And DC.
Yeah.
And sticking with bathing all over Mike. Go ahead.
Okay. We all know my undying love for Tom King as of lately with the Batman run. you know, I jumped on that train with Omega Men. I picked that book up. That was really good. And talk about like giving him things that nobody has touched in a while. Miracle Man, Tom King is writing a 12-issue series on Miracle Man, and I've been talking about it. We need the New Gods back. Here it is. The New Gods are here. Obviously, Miracle Man is going to be, you know, he's an integral part of the, out of the, that's where he started, the New Gods, the son of Apocalypse. Someone has been answering my prayers over at DC, and the, you know, this is like, this is great. We get Tom King on Miracle Man. I couldn't think of anyone better to do it. So, that's it. That's all I have to say.
So, let's see.
Hold on, one more thing.
Okay.
If you remember the event from DC, there's so many, but this is the villains, or this is the one where we had Luther come from another universe with the crime syndicate.
Forever Evil.
From Earth 3. Forever Evil, yeah. You remember Mr. Miracle was part of that, and then he was part, or no, he was part of that, and he was part of the Apocalypse War too, Dark Side War, which, you know, they made him like a pretty integral part. So to see, you know, some more character building here, a little more of his origin, you know, we know he's a master lock picker, blah, 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 but we need the reasoning behind someone who was born in the fires of Apocalypse and why he thinks it's, you know, what drives him to be part of the greater good and helping people instead of a servant to Darkseid. How's that? How's that for an explanation that everybody can get behind? Read the book. I'm so excited right now. This is great.
Mike's really excited. I'm gonna bring it back down.
Okay. All right. Tone it down.
I've always compared the New Gods to the Inhumans. And it seems like Marvel always wants to shove the Inhumans down our throats and be like, these are relevant, do it. And it's like, no one gives a fuck. The New Gods, with the exception of Darkseid, are kind of the same way. But DC, as of recently, and I'm saying that as of the past couple of months, have done things to make me want to read New Gods books. Bug the Forger, yeah. I'm reading. I will read anything that Mike Allred draws, writes, whatever. I'm on board. After reading Volume 1 of Batman, and somebody actually gave me Volume 1 of Tom King's Vision, I'm on to give Tom King credit for anything. I will try it out.
Yes.
They are doing it right.
Did you hear that, everybody?
I'm going to do this again. I'm going to give Mike a nice little, you know, pop in the tent. But they are doing right what Marvel's doing wrong. They are taking top talent and big names and great writers and artists and trying to make characters we don't necessarily care about relevant, which Marvel is not doing with the Inhumans.
You know, you compare them to the Humans. I personally compare the New Gods more to the Shi'ar of the Marvel Universe as far as, like, characters.
Oh, I mean, character-wise, you're right, but I think in terms of how the
company, relevance,
how,
yeah.
Yeah, the relevance and how the company treats them, like,
yeah.
Marvel obviously wants the Inhumans to be a thing, and DC obviously wants New Gods to be a thing.
Because there's so many cool characters. So I'm glad Chris got on board with the Tom King Batman, because it really is hard to top the whole Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo Batman team up. Mm-hmm. Did a really good job at it.
And Tom King's killing it. I mean, I got to read Volume 2. I got it sitting over here, but I can't wait.
Yeah. All right. Marvel stuff.
Now we can. Now Chris gets to talk.
More Star Wars. All right. This is good. We don't have, you know.
Okay. There's just not enough Star Wars talk on today's episode.
No, not. Nope. Definitely not.
So anyone who is listening to the show knows how much I love Star Wars, specifically how much I love Marvel's Star Wars comics. They've been doing a great job on it. They are finally doing a book that people have been asking for. So they had just announced recently that they're doing Star Wars, Jedi of the Republic, Mace Windu.
I don't know if they can fit that whole title on one the front page.
It's a long ass title.
It might be a wraparound title.
So basically, they're doing a Star Wars Mace Windu book. It's going to take place during the Clone Wars. Mace Windu's always been a character that people liked. He's visually interesting. Excuse me. And there's a lot of character there. My only reservation about this is it's going to be written by Matt Owens and drawn by Denny Cohen. Now, Chris, you asked me, who are these people? I have no
clue. Who are these people? Oh, yeah.
So, I can't say, you know, I don't know where they fall in the spectrum. So, we'll see. But they've been doing great with the Marvel books recently, so I don't see this being any different. Are you going to read a Mace Windu book?
I will, yeah. There's a... I mean, as far as Star Wars books go, that would probably the one to get me on board would be a Mace Windu book. Especially if they make him look like Samuel Jackson.
Oh yeah, they do.
And if it says like, if there's like, that doesn't need to be really blatantly put out there, but like have some scripture in the side of his lightsaber spell out like mofo or something.
Well, the legend goes that on the heel of his lightsaber, it says, was it? BAMF?
Yeah, BAMF.
For badass motherfucker.
But I'm sure they could come up with some Star Wars-y explanation to this, but just have it on the... Yeah. Or you don't even need to explain it, just show it. Maybe it's... Oh, man, if they treat it like a... He was in Shaft, didn't he? He did the reboot to Shaft. Wasn't it Samuel Jackson?
He did.
What if they treat it like a Shaft book, like he's just like a boss? Like, you know, almost like a Han Solo type of guy just going through the universe and
who's that badass motherfucker wants. With a late yeah. Saber going through the galaxy.
You know Mace Windu. You better shut your mouth. yeah, that's I don't care how the book goes, but that would be my way to write a Mace Windu book. This is why I'm not writing Mace Windu. because we've never seen that from a Jedi. Well, I guess because the Jedi are respectful. A respectful group of people and don't act like that. So that would probably be out of the...
That is why I'm not a Jedi, among other things.
That's the only reason. The only reason I'm not a Jedi is because, yep, because I'm weak. it's been a long show, everyone.
It's been a long show. We had a mild heart attack and we thought we lost the interview. Yeah. It's been fun.
We're good. It's all fixed now. But now we get to talk about... What?
We got a shitty villain, don't we?
We do have a shitty villain. We want to talk about what the comics have been reading first?
Sure.
Okay. I will say I haven't read Invincible yet, but I have read Batman. I've read Superman.
Oh, by the way, the title... I hope that Tom King came up with it, because if so, I'm going to give him a hug. But the title to the most recent issue of Batman... is the most genius thing that's ever happened.
What is it?
The Brave in the Mold.
Oh, the Brave. Yes. Yeah. That's what I need to talk about. If anybody knows, I'm a huge Swamp Thing fan. And this book is just a one shot. But holy crap. It's just Batman teaming up with Swamp Thing. And there's a moment where, like, Batman needs some information. And, Swamp Thing's standing behind him at the bat computer, and he goes, like, he's looking for a guy, and Swamp Thing's like, I found him. He's in the museum. And he's like, and he looks at him. He's like, how'd you do that? And he's just like, he just looks at him, and then he looks back down at his computer. It's awesome. The interactions between Swamp Thing and Batman are fantastic. Also, Kite Man comes back. Kite Man is back.
Made that look even better.
Yeah, it's Batman. Batman tackles Kite Man. Kite Man, like, he knocks Kite Man to the ground, and Kite Man still goes like, "Hell yeah!" After he gets like beat up. I just want a Kite Man book from Tom King. Superman's really good. We found out who has been behind all the crazy stuff. I was kind of indifferent about who's been behind it all. I don't know if you have any.
I'm still a little bit behind.
Interest.
Red.
Okay, we find out like who who's been, you know, capturing everyone, Batman and Superman in the Superman book. I can't remember the name of them. They're an obscure group from Superman mythology. The guy wears like a Union Jack shirt and like a black leather coat. And they're almost like anti-heroes. They're a group of anti-heroes.
Is this from Superman or Action Comics or both?
It could be both.
It's the Superman Revenge Squad.
And they're not called that. They're called something else, but
just read Action Comics 978. And yeah, I got, are you talking about this group right here?
No, that's a different group.
Okay.
Apparently there's two new groups announced. Yeah, so we'll see where it goes. I mean, I don't have any reservations about it. It's a good storyline. We're finding out, like, you know, we're going to find out why everyone is captured. That's about as far as that's going, but like Outcast is really good. Outcast leaves off with, we know that his father, they're doing this TV show already is what I heard, but his father has been battling the Outcasts. We kind of find out their origin after like 20 something issues. We finally figure out their origin. There's almost like a light and a dark side, which, oh man, I wonder what that sounds like. but they're almost like from another realm or another plane of existence, and to be tethered to the human world, they need to find a host. And basically they can't exist without the other, kind of thing. And the dad's trying to, you know, teach him how to fight things. And he goes, okay, well, now we need to go out and train you. So basically he opens up they go to this house, and he opens up the door of the house, and there's a bunch of evil people just like huddled in the corner and stuff. They're all really weak. Because I think they take a while to get like accustomed to their bodies and stuff. So they're just hiding out in this house, and there's like 30 of them. And the dad opens the door, and he's like, all right, take them out. So the next issue is just going to be him fighting like 30 of them at once, which is going to be awesome. It's going to be like a Daredevil hallway scene of an issue. I see it coming. That's really good. And Paper Girls is really good. They're starting to close in on something, you know, something happening here. They keep talking about glimpses of their futures and their past, and I think it's really going to start to play out on something. I mean, it's Brian K. Vaughan, so he's playing at something here. I just can't tell yet what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. So
that's all I got. Oh, and then the Flash, when we want to talk about that.
I was going to start off with the Flash. So. Probably my favorite lenticular cover yet. It's got a kind of a classic Flash. I don't know. It's kind of hard to do over this, but
Jay Garrick.
I mean, there's OG Jay Garrick, and then
whoosh. Yep, and then the new suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. In case you wouldn't recognize them, they need to have that transition.
So this kind of goes in with our interview. Like, I'm impatient and I want things like in front of me. Fed to me. This kind of rounded out the whole story and brought them right back to where they started. And the only thing I feel like happened is that we saw Jay. And
yeah, with the epilogue at the end.
And the epilogue, yes. But I don't know. It was good. Not great, but I have so many questions coming out of it. And I guess that's my big problem, is we saw Jay, but he, spoilers, kind of died?
It was almost what happened with Wally in Rebirth. They needed something to tether them to the Earth, so yeah. I'm wondering if, like, what's Jay's wife's name? Joan?
Yeah, see, I have no clue, but I know he was trying to get Barry to remember him.
Yeah.
The same way that Wally did,
and I'm sure it's going to be Jay's wife who is going to have to, kind of like how Iris needed, you know, the tether. It's going to be like,
yeah,
they need like the, you know, the love or something, and I think what we're going to see is maybe her in a nursing home, or I don't know how old she is now, but almost like how, you know, Mr. Thunder is in a nursing home right now. They think he's crazy.
Yeah. I also, the thing that really intrigues me here that I really, really hope they get into with the Batman book is the whole, there's that moment where Bruce is looking out his window and he's remembering what his father said to him back in Flashpoint, which was,
yeah,
be Batman, let it die with me.
Yeah. Yep.
And that really intrigues me to see where that goes, because, I mean, to my knowledge, I know that he's not been Batman for different reasons, but has he ever pulled a Spider-Man and just been like, I'm done?
You know, if he did, it wasn't anything of notable,
yeah,
story reference. I mean, like, yeah, he's... and every time it was like, aha, I wasn't actually done. I was just, you know, disguised as this person.
I would love to see him pull, because Spider-Man does this all the time, where he's just like, I can't do it anymore, I'm done. He throws away the...
Yeah, but you got to think about the one person that Bruce respects the most is his father.
Yeah.
Because the only memories he has of him are as a kid where he looked up to him. So he doesn't have any other interaction besides that. And to have a chance to hear from his father and to give him advice before he leaves again, some type of new advice that he hasn't had to process as much as everything else that he had.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that he's, you know, sitting there like, it was almost him sitting there in the chair. It was almost like the, I don't know if you remember the panel from Year One where he's sitting there and the bat crashes through the window. That's almost what it reminded me of, like, you know, how the Batman starts. It's almost how is the Batman will finish too. And I'm like, that's where Tom King, man, he's still sitting in that chair pondering, you know, how will I start and how will I finish?
And that's one of those, I hope that come November, I know one of the things I said I liked about the Doomsday Clock was that's 4-issue series and that's it. But I kind of hope that there are stories going on in Superman, Flash, and Batman that go along with the Watchmen story, but maybe don't complete the story. Don't pull it like this is a side book, but I would love to see Batman be like the consequences of his father's words and see what happens there. And maybe that is the end of Bruce's Batman. Of course, it's comic, so for, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
But I would love to see that story play out. I think there's... I thought that this crossover was really good in the sense that it set up so many things that they can do that I really want to see happen now. But it definitely felt like a chapter two or a part two.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So Secret Empire number 2 came out. It's still been awesome. This really follows what's happening in New Vegas after the attack and kind of the heroes coming together to fix things. And we learn more about what's going on in DC, or I'm sorry, New York City with the Defenders that are trapped there, and the fact that Cloak and Dagger are two of the heroes stuck in New York City right now, and Dagger is kind of the only thing in New York City providing light. So she is 24/7 up above the Empire State Building, just shining the entire city. And as soon as she collapses, there's just no light in that area. There's a cool scene with Wilson Fisk, and he's going around and helping people in his criminal way. And one of the things that really kind of sticks with me is that he says, I don't want anything from you. All I want you to do is to remember that when this is all done, Wilson Fisk is the one that kept you safe.
Oh, boy.
It's kind of creepy.
Typical Wilson Fisk.
Yeah. And then...
Everybody knows Wilson Fisk is the Kingpin.
Yes. And then, so in issue one, I don't remember if we spoiled it or not. I think I tried not to, but Rick Jones died in issue one. So now we have a message from Rick Jones to the underground squad telling them what's going on with Cap, that it was the Cosmic Cube that changed him.
Oh, shit.
So everyone knows what's going on now. And then there's this whole existential crisis between Hawkeye and Black Widow, which is, Hawkeye's just like, we know what's going on. We can save him. And Black Widow says, how many times have we known what's going on and then lost people by trying to save Steve? Like, maybe it's time that we just give up and say we need to kill him in order to move on. So it's this whole back and forth, which I really liked because you don't see it that often. You normally see it like, oh, we found out, and now we can go save him.
Yeah. You don't really Maybe we should just kill Captain America.
Yeah, you don't see...
That's how DC would do it.
You don't see the whole idea of, well, we've tried this so many times leading up to this. What makes you think that this is going to be the one that works? And I really like the idea of that as a story motive. But then we end the book with a huge cliffhanger. Because if you can see here, this is the last page. Spoilers, everybody. It's Steve Rogers.
Yeah. The real Steve Rogers. Please stand up.
So that's our mystery character that shows up because he says, my name is Steve Rogers. I'm trying to get home. So, yeah.
So, who was this Steve Rogers?
So, yeah, Secret Empire has been amazing. It's really speaking to me as a cat fan. We got...
Good.
Yo-Kai Watch, number one. You ever play Yo-Kai
Watch? Oh, yeah, I forgot that came out. No, I haven't. I know you play it a lot, though. You love it, right?
I love Yo-Kai Watch. It's a Pokemon-esque kind of game. This goes back... Yeah, yeah. They do a quick summary of what Yo-Kai Watch is. And then they kind of go back in time. And the big standout character, the quote-unquote Pikachu of Yo-Kai Watch, is Jibanyan. And he has a lineage, and one of them is kind of a samurai version of him. So this is the whole story of that character and his backstory and where he came from.
That's awesome. I love samurais.
And then we kind of get a cliffhanger where he's going to come into modern day. If you like Yo-Kai Watch, I mean, it's a cool story. It fits... in somewhere with the cartoon. But I'm a huge fan, so I did that. Mighty Thor. What do we got? Number 19. See the Phoenix Force? See it?
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
So the Phoenix Force has a new host. And we were talking about the Shi'ar earlier. The Shi'ar Empire has a new god, which is the Phoenix Force. And there's... Jane Foster, who's trying to figure out what to do with the Congress of Worlds because she is being shooed away. So she gets Rosalind Solomon, who's from earlier in the series, an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., to take her place while she goes and becomes Thor. And we find out that this whole fight between the Shi'ar and Thor and the other Asgardians has been a plot by Malekith. And he has another war in mind that he is going to unleash upon people. And it looks like next issue we're going to find out who this new Thor is. The third Thor. It's Thor galore.
Thor galore, I love it.
It's awesome. I'm not going to go too much into it, but Curse Words number 3. Read it. Curse Words is awesome.
Cool.
So you didn't read Invincible, so I'm not going to spoil it. But Invincible is really good. It's really bloody. Like,
nice.
Even a little, like, bloody for Invincible standards.
Oh, man. That's what I like to hear.
And it answered my big question, which was, it seemed like this fight was too early in the story. Well, there's a reason for that. We'll find out next issue. Injustice 2.
Oh, yeah, you picked up Injustice, huh?
Injustice 2, issue 2. So, Batman has got automatic weapons. He kills a bunch of people. It's pretty fantastic. But then, who comes to fight him? Batman. Who would have thought?
Batman fights Batman.
So, we kind of don't know who this Batman is. I'm trying to remember if they revealed it or not. I don't think they did, but then it's really weird. So then something happens, and it looks like Superman's going to get out at the end. Book's great, but if you haven't been reading from day one, I don't think it's all that interesting.
Yeah, you need to be there from ground zero.
Yeah. Star Wars Screaming Citadel, the newest crossover from Star Wars. It's Dr. Aphra and Star Wars, so it's Luke and Dr. Aphra. They're trying to... Basically, Dr. Aphra's found this crystal that has the mind of an ancient Jedi in it, which could help train Luke. So they need to work together to figure that out, because Luke needs a trainer, and she likes money. The only big thing to take from this book, other than it's really good, is that they go to this, like, ball to try to... Where the fuck is it? There it is. They go to this ball to try to, like, convince this person to help them with the crystal. And first of all...
Like a ballroom?
Yeah. So first of all, here's Luke in a suit. Tuxedo Luke. That's one big thing.
Huh.
Number two...
Tuxedo Luke.
I'm pretty sure that this the Empress's servant is Dead Man.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for sure.
And
that is Dead Man.
This isn't Watto, but one of Watto's people's in the book. That's all. Read Star Wars.
Watto.
I got my last book. My Little Pony, number 53.
Oh boy. What's the premise of this? What are they doing this time? Are they having another sleepover?
No, this is the aftermath of the sleepover.
Oh god.
So we find the magic unicorn, figure out what's going on there. She apparently is the descendant of a monster and is worried that people reading books about monsters is going to make her look bad.
I think people reading books about My Little Ponies will make them look bad.
Yeah.
I love it.
So half of them get trapped in one universe, half of them get trapped in another. There's a whole storyline where two of them... The only one I know, and that's because it's fucking obvious, is Rainbow Dash. She gets stuck in kind of a old Egypt storyline with one of her friends, and then somebody else gets stuck in like a medieval storyline with one of her friends. They're both kind of stupid. And I'm trying to remember. I kind of like fell asleep halfway through this book. I'm not going to lie to you. Oh yeah, they find out that there actually is some story about an ancient evil that is part of that other pony's lifeline that's coming.
It's all good. You don't need to go on anymore. Yeah. I get it. I just need to know that you read it.
It's some pretty awful stuff.
I'm glad.
But yeah, that's all my comics for this week.
We're going on an hour or two here. Time for the shitty villain.
I'm excited about this one.
The Eraser, and we'll post the picture up of him. Not even the Eraser, just Eraser. Which, if you couldn't guess, it was a reincarnated. It was original villain from the 1940s. Batman had three appearances, and then Grant Morrison and retconned him in the Batman RIP storyline. And yeah, so he's a professional that he covers up the tracks of other people's crimes for a 20% cut. The eraser will erase the evidence of another crime. So not only do we have a shitty villain that can't cover up the crime that they committed, which is part of being a villain, unless you want to be popular and I don't know. This guy goes around and prides himself on shitty villains by erasing their crimes, which it's like his first appearance is Batman number 188, titled "The Eraser Who Tried to Rub Out Batman." Wow. This is, let's see. He was a college classmate of Bruce Wayne and was continually mocked by his fellow students for all the mistakes he made in class. The few people who remembered Letty always pictured him with an eraser in his hand, correcting his mistakes. Oh, man. Oh, that gets better. It gets better. Okay. The good thing he didn't use a pen, though. Like, I'm glad he used an eraser. The only girl Lenny ever wanted was fellow classmate Celia Smith. He planned to take her to the school's ice carnival. God, this is such a 1940s book. The ice carnival? Are you serious? Lenny was crushed when she chose to go with Bruce Wayne. Feeling quite bitter, he turned to a life of crime, developing an eraser costume that can eliminate all the evidence from a crime scene. So does he, like, if you look at his costume,
it's exquisite. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's got a giant eraser on his head. Yeah. And this is funny because he has an appearance in, there was an Ambush Bug book, Ambush Bug Year None, it's called. It's, I'm surprised you haven't heard of it, but there was another Ambush Bug book back in the day.
Okay.
But he has an appearance in that. Yeah, so powers and abilities. The eraser wore shoes tipped with pencil point blades that could all emit a sleeping gas. Off with a giant eraser that could rub out evidence from crime scenes like footprints, fingerprints, etc.
So my big question really is it lead pencil? Because if so, that's pretty fucking sinister.
Yeah. Well, this is funny. He had an appearance in Batman the Brave and the Bold cartoon. I think most of the shitty villains had appearances. Yeah. Yeah, that's
it's a good one.
The kid, the poor kid was just always
the backstory is what gets me. Like, the backstory is so cheesy.
Yeah.
That I love it. And it just proves that we may have peaked, but if we dig deep enough, we can find some shitty villains.
Yeah, I dug deep for this one. And it's funny because, you know, like, the comic book writers were like, think of something, looked over at, like, the artist and was, like, drawing with a pencil. And he looked at the eraser and he was like, why not? and it became a thing. So hold on. He took out advertisements as the eraser in the Secret Underground. It's a periodical newspaper aimed at Gotham's small-time criminals.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Don't take chances. Let the eraser erase every clue from your crimes. Only 20% of a job before taxes. Oh my god.
I love the edit before taxes.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Who's paying taxes on this?
Yeah. does he report to the IRS? Is he like, eraser, looks like you had a good year this year, man. You're really raking it in. Yeah, but it sucks. I'm going to pay taxes. Oh my god.
Your business is really booming. We're really impressed.
Oh my god. It's like the IRS comes to audit them. They're like, huh, is there really a villain named, I don't know, who's the guy with the, is there really a villain named Codpiece? Yes, he exists. Oh, you erased his crime scene? I swear, he exists. Okay. Sure. What does he do? Well, he has a giant cock cannon. we might have to look into this. you might want to rethink your job.
Oh, man.
On that note, I think that is the end of the episode. Thanks for sticking with us this episode. It's been a great time.
Yeah, it's been a long one, but a fun one.
You can find me at Ricker621 on Instagram. You can find Chris at
Fortress Chris on Facebook and Twitter, and Fortress News Chris on Instagram. The show is on fortressofcomicnews.com as well as facebook.com/fortressofcomicnews. If you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe and like the video. Also, every Tuesday now, I am putting up the top 5 comics you must buy on Wednesday.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I like that.
So check those videos out. I'm having a lot of fun with them. I just finished this week's, so it'll be up on time this week. And
awesome.
Developing another show, trying to figure it out, because it's going to be a lot of work on my end, but I think it'll be cool. I'm going to call it Comic History 101.
Wow.
So,
who are you doing that show with? Is it going to be just you?
Just me.
Oh, man.
I mean, we could talk about doing it together. I'm still developing the idea.
If there's anyone that knows comic book history, I mean...
So
we should really get Craig involved if we could, so...
Yeah, but if... My big thing there is if you're on Twitter or, you know, you want to email me or something, let me know, because I can't decide whether I want it to be character-based and say, like, oh, this is Captain America. He was created in 1940. Ugh. Or if I want to, like, go back and say, like, you know, let's talk about Seduction of the Innocent and the birth of the Comics Code.
I love it. I think that's what I want.
Yeah. That's kind of what I want to do.
Corruption of the Young Mind.
Yeah, like, I want to do that and go back. Like, let's talk about the birth of the Comics Code. And let's talk about, you know, romance comics. And, like, let's talk about obscure bullshit from the 40s and 50s and into today. And just, like, let's talk about the history of this medium. Like, that's kind of what I want to do. And I'm thinking that's where I'm leaning. But I want to know what everyone else is thinking, whether they... You know, would they like me to do that? Maybe mix in some once in a while. Do like, let's talk about MODOK. Or, but I'll be listening to your ideas if you guys throw them out to me. And for that, I say thank you for listening. I just want to fade from this, like, slowly, like have you fall into the distance. And then cut.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching this video. Remember to subscribe to our channel. It should be right here. There's a little button. Yeah. Thanks for clicking that. Also, remember to like and comment on our video. We love hearing from you and really appreciate it. Hope to see you next time.